Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Everyone has a story to tell. Take Sarah. She can see all the films she wants, whenever she wants, at Cineworld. From X-Men Apocalypse to Alice Through the Looking Glass. She gets 10% off all her cinema snacks. Tasty nachos, chilled soft drinks, you name it. Plus 25% off at some of her favourite restaurants, like Chiquito. That's Sarah's unlimited story. Start yours today when you join Cineworld Unlimited from just $16.90 a month. Love cinema? Join the club. Sign up today at your local Cineworld or visit cineworld.com.
Hello, I'm Tristan Riddell.
And I'm Matt Hansen.
And you're listening to The Nerd Party.
Talk nerdy to me.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
All right, this is episode 49 of The Senate Floor, and we thank you so much for tuning in. It's good to be back. I feel like I've been gone for a long time.
I feel like you've been gone for a long time, too. This is, what, the first time in 3 weeks that you and I are... We talk offline, and, you know, we text each other quite frequently, but this is the first time Tristan and I have actually, like, face-to-face spoken with each other in about 3 weeks.
See, that's the thing, is that, you know, like, you have... when we were just a bi-weekly show, you know, we took a week off... And then it would be like normal where we wouldn't see each other again for another 3 weeks. But then, you know, like sometimes we would just like, oh, we'll just adjust it and we'll do it next week and we'll shift our bi-weekly schedule. But now that Lee is a part of the show and a part of the network, I don't want to step on his toes. And so, yeah, I usually have to take a back seat whenever I'm sick with the black lung or am on vacation. And but it's good to be back. And a lot has happened in the past 3 weeks.
Certainly has. And, you know, I think another reason that we start missing each other more is because we're starting to do more projects as the network expands. I mean, it was a Senate Floor, but we did a commentary for Winter Soldier with you and me and Lee. And then we did the extra commentary for Aggressive Negotiations for The Force Awakens. And that was mm-hmm. fun. And we have other projects coming down the pipeline where, you know, a lot of us are going to be involved. And it's exciting times here at the Nerd Party.
It is, and so everyone should check out all of our other shows on the network. Go to thenerdparty.com. There you can find every single episode from this show, our spinoff show, Filibuster, Nerd Nuptial, which is a show that I host with my wife, and then we have our Star Wars podcast, Aggressive Negotiations. Now, before we get too deep into it, I do want to mention a few things, though, is that one thing that we have not done in a very long time is mention the 5-star reviews. Now,
yes.
We've gotten a lot in the year of 2016, in the past 5 months. I mean, a lot for us. And we want to thank everybody individually for your 5-star reviews. We'd like to thank Kessel Junkie, that sounds familiar,
uh-huh.
Cold Pizza 320, Geopilot 55, Rug Cutter 305, Oreo Cookie Cow, Heather B, and Mr. 8-Bit. Now, a lot of these people we know, a lot of these people have emailed us or contacted us on Twitter, and every single one of these people, I think, are huge champions of the show and big supporters, and so we thank you very, very much. And if you like the Senate Floor, if you like Filibuster, please take a few moments, go to iTunes, search for us, give us a review, and if you give us a 5-star review, we'll mention you on the show, and it really helps us out. Just like you talking to your friends about us and about this network and about this show. That helps us immensely. Like, we don't ask you for money. You know, we're not asking you to donate to the network. All we're asking is just a couple seconds of your time to write us a review.
And it's thoroughly appreciated.
I'd like to mention what we're going to do today. And what we're doing today is we are discussing, because I feel like we're at a pinnacle. We're at a crucible, a turning point. The pendulum is swinging, whatever you want to call it. Right now, there's this huge battle between franchise films and original projects, quote-unquote original projects. And we as geeks, we as nerds, recognize that there's a big difference between a tentpole film, a recognized intellectual property, and something that's purely original or based off of not a well-known book. But before we get into that discussion of where we are as a nerd culture... You're going to go see a movie today. Is that correct?
I am. Despite the somewhat tepid response that it's been getting from critics and some fans, I will say I am going to be seeing X-Men Apocalypse later today. Now, it's a film that I was looking forward to. In our pre-show discussion, Tristan said I was gung-ho about it. And maybe I was at one point, but The X-Men films, I think, have always been reliable films to me. It's a franchise that I've enjoyed and really thought they had solid casting and solid stories, that they were the first comic book films that I was interested in back in the day. But not too many things in my lexicon reaches the level of hype that the Marvel Cinematic Universe does. But, you know, it's something that I'm still looking forward to in spite of its reception. This is one where I will go in and make up my own mind, because I've heard different things from different people. Lee didn't like it so much. Gerardo, who's a friend of mine, who's a listener of this show, comments quite frequently, saw it last night and really enjoyed it. So, you know, I'll be interested to see where I come down.
Also, host of the network, Matt Rushing, he just released a review on our website. If you go to thenerdparty.com/blog, you can find his review. It's a real quick, real simple review of it. And spoiler alert, he liked it. And I think it was a refreshing take on something that I think a lot of people are speaking negative about. Now, when trailers first came out, for some reason, it just didn't have that je ne sais quoi. Like, it just didn't grab me. And I was really perplexed why it wasn't grabbing me, because I was such a big fan of Days of Future Past. I was excited about that movie.
I enjoyed the trailers. I thought, you know, it looks for a solid story. But even I could tell that there was something. When I saw the first few Days of Future Past trailers, there was something really, really special. Now, I don't know if they got me, they suckered me with the gimmick of the idea of the two casts joining forces or not. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was something that, I shouldn't have discounted that plot device so quickly, because it was something that we had not seen before with this franchise. And as much as I love this franchise, have not quite done as well as something like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, in my opinion, is that they haven't really diversified. I mean, mm-hmm. when you go to see an X-Men film, you kind of know what you're getting. Versus, you know, people say Marvel Cinematic Universe films have a formula, and I think to a certain extent that's true, although I think that's a little bit exaggerating, because they do try to switch it up with either certain plot devices or genres, you know, be it Winter Soldier was a political thriller, and Guardians of the Galaxy is a space opera, and Ant-Man is a heist film. You know what I mean? So they're always trying to do something slightly different with each entry, which I think helps for its longevity. That's something that the X-Men franchise hasn't done yet. Now they're trying, and I think the success of Deadpool, even though that's not technically an X-Men titled film, it is in the X-Men franchise. And right. because they were doing something different with that, look at the success it's had. So I think once they start striking out and trying to take more chances, I think people will come around, and I think the critics might take a closer look. But even I could see that Apocalypse was, it looks like an X-Men film. And mm-hmm. and some of that was going to, I felt that might be a come down for a lot of people, especially after they were doing something a little bit different with Days of Future Past.
I find it interesting, because when you look at franchise films, like the X-Men franchise, you know, like you have your good ones, you have your bad ones, you have your mediocre ones. But I feel like in today's age, we're all invested in Rotten Tomatoes scores. We're all invested in box office mojo numbers. You know, like it's so readily available to us.
That's the difference, is because, I mean, back in the day, even when Rotten Tomatoes was first starting, we didn't put as much stock into it because it wasn't a well-known site that people were checking. Now, I mean, you can look at some of the track records. There are exceptions, but most of the big franchise films or well-known tentpoles, they live and die by their Rotten Tomatoes ratings now.
And when we look at these numbers, and when you look at the reception, and it doesn't make better numbers than the one before, whether it's ratings or money or opening weekend or anything like that, whenever it fails to do that, we see it as an utter failure. And also, if we go to the theater and we watch this movie and we're like, Spectre wasn't as good as Skyfall, so that movie sucks. Why? You know, why does that movie suck? If it's not better than the one before or better than another one in the franchise, does it mean that you can't enjoy that movie? You know, like if X-Men Apocalypse comes out and it's just an okay movie, that doesn't mean that the franchise is dead.
No, I think what you're saying is that people are reacting to this stuff on like a binary scale. If it's not better, it's bad.
Yes, thank you. Yes, exactly. That is very concise. That is exactly what I was trying to say.
And that's a shame. It really is, because I feel like I tried to give movies their due. Now, I could very well see Apocalypse today and think it's okay, but it's nowhere near something like, for me, First Class or Days of Future Past. But I could still like it. Or sometimes you do fall in line with the critics and you're like, wow, that was a huge come down. Like, I think in those cases it is justified when you're like, wow, that really was not as good as the last one. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I mean, like, you just got done talking about Search for Spock. And even though both you and I love that movie, we cannot argue that most people didn't like it as much as Wrath of Khan.
Right.
And so a lot of people just discount it because it was just right afterwards. Now, just imagine if everyone in the world discounted Search for Spock just because it wasn't as good as The Wrath of Khan. We wouldn't have gotten The Amazing Voyage Home, Final Frontier, and then we wouldn't have gotten Undiscovered Country, you know, like some of the best original series movies out there. And it's just these franchises, like, I love franchise films, and like, we're going to talk about franchise and originality, but right now, like, you know, we're talking about X-Men Apocalypse. It's okay. It's okay if Bryan Singer comes out with a mediocre film. It doesn't mean he's done. Doesn't mean he's a bad director. It just means, okay, we had a misstep on this one.
Yeah, it means the man has had three good X-Men films, but he can't bat 1,000 each time.
Right.
It was bound to happen eventually. And even still, I mean, this might be my bias coming in, but I refuse to believe, even though it has a lower Rotten Tomatoes score, I refuse to believe that he's made a worse film than The Last Stand, because I know he's better than that. I could be totally wrong, and I will eat my words on air if I'm wrong, but I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt just based on a track record, which for me, when I'm looking at stuff, is important.
Yes, absolutely. And I think there are extremes where, you know, like, I'm not trying to say, like, oh, just because it's a, you know, if it's a bad movie, it doesn't, you should stick with it. I'm not trying to say that, because there are extremes where, you know, like with the JJ verse, you know, like, Into Darkness pissed off a lot of people, even people who loved 09, like myself. And I was willing to get over it. I was willing to move past it and, you know, like, reconcile my feelings for that movie, because I love the universe and I love the franchise and I'm still invested in said franchise. And so I'm super excited about Star Trek Beyond, but I don't blame the people who are like, you know what? I was burned too much, too hard by Into Darkness, and so I just don't think I can go back. I get it. You know, I get it, because that's not a situation of, oh, that's not as good, so it's bad. That's a situation of, I just plain didn't like that movie.
Right. I still think it's a bit of an extreme reaction, but people are entitled to react to however they're going to react. But I do think that, like we keep saying, this binary system of it has to be better, otherwise it sucks, is doing a real disservice. I mean, if not everything can be better than the last film. Even when even when Civil War was getting ready to come out, I was not expecting it to get a high, and it ultimately did a little bit, but I was not expecting it to get a higher rating than Winter Soldier, just because it's very hard to do. It's very hard to exceed yourself, especially when your last film was so well received. But sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. But even if the film came out the way it was and it got like an 82% on Rotten Tomatoes versus like Winter Soldier's 89 or 90, that still wouldn't have made the film worse.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Doesn't mean it's a failure. And if, like, just because it didn't reach $1 billion, which is now like some sort of standard, you know, yeah. People see it as a failure. And I'm like, really? You know, like, you look at these films that have made 800, 700, 900 million or something like that. And people are like, but it didn't make Avatar money. I was like, yeah, nobody's making Avatar money. Come on, calm down. Calm down.
Nobody's ever going to make Avatar money except maybe James Cameron.
Oh, okay. So, I think that's a great segue. So, you know, Avatar is, believe it or not, it was conceived as an original sci-fi film now it's become a franchise. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about original versus franchise. So as we all know, in this community, you know, we love to complain. And we have seen this huge shift in the movie industry towards quote-unquote tentpole films or recognizable intellectual property films, right. Franchise films, something that the audience knows what it is. And there, because this is a trend, people naturally have to go against the trend by saying, we need to stop with so much franchise films and fund original ideas.
And never mind the fact that the franchise film success funds the original ideas.
That's one thing that we need to talk about today, is because, Matt, you and I, it's no secret that we love franchise films. We just got done talking about X-Men, Star Trek, Avatar, you know, like we love it. You know, like Marvel, all fantastic stuff. Sometimes that's all that gets me in the theaters nowadays, is these big franchise films. And
they know that.
But at the same time, I'm very much a hypocrite, because I was like, no, we need more original. Let's not make another board game into a movie. You know, like, let's not take a popular iPhone app.
You mean you're not looking forward to Warcraft?
Yeah, Warcraft, Angry Birds. There's an Angry Birds movie, and it's making lots of money. That's the thing. That is why people do this. That is why these studios do it, is because it's a safer bet and it makes money. And so I have a hard time blaming the studios for doing it. Who I blame are the people who vote with their pocketbook.
Right, because that's what it comes down to at the end of the day. I mean, and if we just look at it from a studio mentality and taking our feelings out of it, it makes sense. You have a recognizable intellectual property that comes in with a predetermined existing fan base. Add those two things together equals a lot of money, hopefully. So it makes sense if you're looking, and like I keep saying to the people who, you know, there seems to be this trend lately, Tristan, of like, the studios need to be making these films for the fans, and it's because they make these films for passion. And I'm like, no, they make these films to make money. Movie studios are businesses, mm-hmm. first and foremost. That's why you're going to see a lot of franchises, because they are businesses.
Yeah, they're in the business of making money, and you can, like, with franchise films, you can devote entire crews to managing these franchise films. Like, you can have, you know, like at Paramount, you can have a Transformers, you know, crew who's in charge of developing those movies and releasing those movies, because they bring in a crap ton of money. You can have people at Paramount who is solely in charge of the Star Trek franchise. You know, it's just, but when you have these one-offs, it's, you know, like, they don't put a lot of money behind it, because when you're watching TV and people at home, like, see a trailer for a movie that they have never seen before, don't recognize anybody in the cast, they've never heard of Ex Machina, so they're like, okay, this indie, you know, sci-fi film called Ex Machina, you know, looks interesting. But if you see something that comes along that says Transformers and Michael Bay, people are like, I know those words. You know, like, mm-hmm. I know what I'm going to get. You know what you're going to get when you go to a Transformers film. You don't know what you're going to get when you go see an independent original story like Ex Machina. And the thing is, Ex Machina is a million times better than any Transformers movie ever made, but it didn't make any money. And Transformers is in the billions.
Right. I do think this is something that we could touch upon later if you'd like, Tristan, but I do think sometimes with original films that are successful, studios are trying to combat that by relying on the old system of star power, because if you have an original property, but you put some names in that original property, maybe you guarantee more money from audiences.
Yes. And I'm really glad that you brought that up, because if it doesn't have an already established IP and it doesn't have a star power, you know, it's probably not going to get made. But I think we are seeing a trend start to happen where directors who have juice, yes, can make this happen regardless of star power or intellectual property. Because right now I'm looking at the top grossing movies between 1995 and 2016, and it's all adjusted for price inflation. I'm going to go from 25 down to 1, okay?
Okay.
And see if you can see a trend here. Men in Black 2, Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 2, The Matrix, Star Trek 09, War of the Worlds, I Am Legend, Inception, Signs, Mockingjay Part 1, Armageddon, Transformers: Dark of the Moon, Transformers, The Matrix Reloaded, The Lost World: Jurassic Park, Hunger Games, Episode 2, Hunger Games: Catching Fire, Transformers: Revenge of the Fallen, Men in Black, Star Wars Episode 3, Independence Day, Jurassic World, Episode 1, Avatar, and Episode 7.
Right.
A lot of franchises on that list, but there was also a lot of original stories, too.
Yes, and then the difference being is that the original stories were all helmed by directors who either have a track record leading up to now, or in the case of Signs, had a track record that was pretty good up until that point.
I like Signs, so shut up.
I'm not saying Signs is a bad film, but I'm saying Shyamalan's name carried more weight back when Signs was coming out versus now.
Yeah, oh, very, very true. Very true. Yeah, see, that's the thing, is that, you know, Star Wars, obviously, well-established intellectual property. Transformers, well-established intellectual property because of the toys and the cartoons and everything like that, and just, like, the nostalgia of the fan base. But then you have Armageddon, Signs, Inception, and The Matrix. I know The Matrix is kind of based off of a Japanese comic book, but nobody knew about it.
Right.
And then you have Men in Black, which I think is also based off a Japanese comic, but maybe I'm wrong.
It's based off of some comic.
Yeah. But then again, you know, no one really knew about it. And then you have Avatar, which is completely and utterly original. And that's the thing.
Some would argue that, but I give more credit to Cameron than most people do.
Yeah, so do I. I mean, like, yes, I know it's Dances with the Na'vi. I get it, you know. But it's funny because we're screaming for original stories. And then as soon as the original stories become popular, they become franchises. It becomes, you know, recognizable intellectual property. And so I keep thinking of this Dark Knight quote where it's just like, either you die a hero or you live long enough to become the villain.
Right. And I was going to say, and then when they become franchises, we all get mad. And I'm
exactly.
Like, make a ton of money. So why are we getting mad that people want to capitalize on that? Because it's still a business.
It's still a business. Exactly. Like, you know, like a lot of people are angry at the Matrix trilogy because the Matrix was transcendental, the first one. And then a lot of people think that there is a huge drop in quality with the second and third one and feels like it should have just been left alone. But that's the risk that you play. You know, like that's the game you play, is that if you want your original movie to be popular, people are going to say, well, let's see another one. Or, you know, the business side of things are going to go, well, if that did well, we now have a new sandbox to play with.
Right. Now, I think people are very valid in their reasoning that when franchises come back and they aren't as good, you could say, well, yeah, maybe we should have left that one alone, knowing that that was never going to happen. Like something with like The Matrix, those two sequels are not very good at all, but they were still going to be made regardless. So it's hard to split the difference, but you have to, if you're trying to never be perpetually unhappy in this age of franchise films, you have to understand the rules that are involved.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to understand, just because you helped one film make a lot of money, understand that that means it probably is going to be followed up on, and there's always the risk of it not being as good. So
yeah, and that's the thing, is like, if you look at the original sci-fi films of 2015, there's three that I'm looking at that were monumental failures, and that is Jupiter Ascending, Chappie, and Tomorrowland.
Right.
Now, all three of these had very good directors, all of them, and Jupiter Ascending was probably, I think, the biggest failure of that, and because the Wachowskis, I just don't think the Wachowskis know what they're doing anymore.
No, they really don't.
And it's just, you look at these films, and these are all original, and this is all something that we've been screaming for, but yet we didn't go to the theater to see them. Now, some people say, like, oh, because they're horrible movies, and so that's a bad example, but Ex Machina was a great movie, and no one saw that either. And even if you go back to I'm just a couple years before, between 2012 and 2013, some of the biggest flops were original. You got After Earth, which was a month, speaking of Shyamalan, and then you had, but then you had John Carter. Now that was an established novel property, but nobody knew about it. Like the pop culture was not very aware of John Carter. And if you want to say, oh, well, I knew about it ever since I was a little boy, good for you. I'll give you a gold star. But you cannot argue that the majority of people didn't know what John Carter was. And then you had two other flops that weren't original. You had Battleship, because surprise, surprise, that didn't do well because it was based off of a board game. And then you have Total Recall, which was a remake where a lot of people felt like, actually, no, I want to save Total Recall. Like, with Battleship, you know, like, I feel like the only movie that should ever be based off of a board game and since and before and forward is Clue.
Right. And that already has a good movie that, you know, as much as I love to argue franchises, don't ever touch that one because you can't do
that. No. That's not what I'm saying at all. That's not what I'm saying at all.
I understand that's not what you're saying. I'm saying I'm going against my normal let it go mentality with franchises. Don't even touch Clue the movie because you can't do it better with a different cast.
So you look at Total Recall, and a lot of people thought that this would have been a good film if they didn't make it a remake, just change the names, because it was so wildly different, they could have just tweaked it. And I think a lot of people went in because of preconceived notions of how much they love the Arnold Schwarzenegger film and then judged it by that. But if this 2012 Total Recall stood on its own 2 feet, it might have done better. Now, I feel like that is an interesting conversation to have because, you know, like a lot of times intellectual property helps you, because you don't have to do as much advertising. But with this one, I feel like the established intellectual property hurt it. What do you think?
I think it's interesting. Total Recall is an interesting case because that's based off of a Philip K. Dick story. Is it We'll Remember It For You Wholesale? That's the one. That's Total Recall. Yes, that is Total Recall, because Electric Sheep, that's Blade Runner. I think it's interesting with something like Total Recall because it's an adaptation of something like... It obviously had an original movie that was made in 1990. Now, I am not familiar with the story that it's based on, the Philip K. Dick story, but the way adaptations in the past have worked is when they've been adapted, especially if they were made in the 80s and 90s. Back then, when adaptations were made for the big screen, they usually took liberties with how things were described in the story and in putting them on screen. So everything didn't translate exactly right. Now, I've noticed when people go back to remake adaptations these days, a lot of the goals in mind are to stick closer to the story. That's usually what happens when I've seen... that's something that happened with the Carrie remake that came out a couple of years ago with Chloe Grace Moretz. That was intended to follow the book closer than the Sissy Spacek movie did. But I think the problems that they face are more unique because when you have an adaptation that is not necessarily close to the book, but got a lot of popularity when it came out, Total Recall, Carrie 1976, that is the version that is in most people's minds. Mm-hmm. So even though you're sticking closer to the book, people don't care about the book. They want to see something that's closer to what they already know. And if it strays far from what they've already established in their brains as this is what Carrie or this is what Total Recall is, they get upset. And that's the danger of having a well-known adaptation come out before the faithful adaptation does.
Now, just imagine if 30 years from now, 30, 40 years from now, they remade Harry Potter.
Right.
You know, like, but they said, you know what, we're going to be as faithful to the book as possible. You know, like, you know, Harry's going to have, he's not going to be as attractive as Daniel Radcliffe. Hermione's going to have crazy hair. You know, everyone's going to look exactly how it's described in the book. We're going to follow the plot line as close as possible. And, you know, like some people would say that's interesting. A lot of other people would say that's heresy. But just imagine if it was closer to the book, people aren't going to compare it to the book. more, I guess some people are, but the majority of people are going to compare it to the movie.
Right.
And call it a remake instead of just a movie that's based on the original source material.
And that's the danger with it, right? Of having a well-known adaptation. And that's why, God bless anyone who tries to remake Harry Potter, because... Or any of these franchises now. I mean, like, I feel like people sometimes don't even want to try. They would rather do what they're doing with Harry Potter at the moment and trying to spin off of it, because there's no way you can go back and remake it. I mean, even with something like Jurassic World last year. I mean, it's been 20 years since the first Jurassic Park. It is – that falls into my head timeline as, you know, prime for a remake. But that's something that obviously when you have something like Jurassic Park, as iconic as it was, doing a remake of it is going to be very dangerous water. So they chose to spin off and sequelize it.
Yeah, absolutely. And just so we're not misunderstood, folks, we're not saying they should remake Harry Potter. We're not saying they should remake Jurassic Park. We're just using it as an example. Yeah, if you look at original sci-fi in 2013, and I know we're sticking with sci-fi just because you and I are sci-fi nuts, but original sci-fi in 2013, you have Oblivion, After Earth, Pacific Rim, Elysium, and Gravity. Two of those were very successful. But like we talked about before, you know, like with Gravity, you had star power.
That's specifically the movie that I was thinking of when I said that, because Gravity is actually one of my favorite movies to come out of 2013. And it was fun. But the reason I went to go see it is, aside from the premise, which looked interesting, you had George Clooney and you had Sandra Bullock. Absolutely. Two people who I like.
As well as a very talented director.
Correct. And someone who had a good track record. So you mix all three of those together with what looks like a good story. That's why you get Gravity's numbers.
That's right. And with Pacific Rim, did that flop? Because let me look down, because it had a production budget of almost $200 million, and I guess worldwide it did a whole lot better than it did in the States.
Yes.
And so I guess it did. It just barely doubled its budget. And I for one, didn't like the movie. And I don't even really care what you guys think, because I've heard so much defense of that movie where you look like you're an idiot if you don't like the movie. And I like every single time once.
Whereas Tristan is saying, you look like an idiot if you do like the movie.
Yeah, that is exactly what I'm saying. Because, I mean, just like your lead character, when your lead character can't act, it's hard for me to enjoy the film.
You're just too harsh. I mean, I wasn't crazy about the film either, but I'm not going to get in people's grill for defending it.
I think the only reason why I'm doing that is because people have defended it so ardently and been so crazy. Like, if you say, like, oh, I didn't really like Pacific Rim, people will just lose their minds. There's something about the Guillermo del Toro fan base that just mystifies me. I have yet to see a single del Toro film that I have enjoyed. And I remember there was one time I was making a film, and we were all in the production van. And the guy driving was talking about Pan's Labyrinth. And I just said, I was like, oh, yeah, I hated that movie. He literally pulled over the car off the road and turned around and said, I demand you give me an explanation as to why you don't like it. And I said, I demand you give me an explanation why you're being an asshole, because you pulled off the road just so you could tell a story saying, hey, one guy said he didn't like Pan's Labyrinth, that I totally pulled off the road and demanded an explanation. That's the only reason why he did it.
Okay, all right, well... I would hate to see what you would do if we were driving and I said I didn't like David Fincher.
Well, I already know that you don't like David Fincher. I've made my peace with it. That's the difference between me and some of these Guillermo del Toro fans. If you say I don't like David Fincher, I go, hey, he's not for everybody. If I say I don't like Guillermo del Toro, people are going to be sending me emails and tweets calling me an idiot. That's the difference.
So, by the way, anyone who's listening to this who wants to do that, send your tweets to @TheInsaneRobin.
And if you want to talk to my publicist, you can go to @mhanson0207.
I have nothing to do with this publicist.
Oh, well, anyway, moving on. What else should we talk about here? So, like, okay, so where do you fall? Where do you fall on the original versus franchise? Because for me, I'm a huge hypocrite, where I say, hey, let's get more original stories out there. You know, like, let's do more as much as possible. Let's sacrifice one or two tentpole films and then fund the other ones. But then I always wait for video or I wait for Netflix. And so they don't get the money that they need to show that they should produce more original content.
Well, I mean, I try to walk a fine line, and maybe I am hypocritical, but of course I like the idea of new ideas and new original films, because who doesn't? I mean, like, it would be a shame to never have anything original. But at the same time, look at what we talk about on this show, Tristan, especially when we do our what's our most anticipated for the year at the end of the year or the top of the new year so far. Almost half of them have been franchise films. I would say even all of them have been franchise films. And I've come to accept that franchise films are just going to be what gets me the most excited, because I've already, you know, I have a fan mentality. I have ever since I was 5 and I started watching Star Trek. I will always be most excited for the tentpole films, but I champion when original ideas come out and are well reviewed. Now, I will say that if original films come out and they're not well reviewed, I usually don't spring the money for it. And I don't think that's my fault. I don't think that's necessarily a crazy thing to do. It doesn't mean you're not supporting original ideas. It simply means that I have bills to pay, and I have X amount of money that I can spend to go see the movies. I would rather spend that money to see something good than something bad just because it's original.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think for me, it might not be so much be a franchise versus original. I think this might be the difference for me. It's that it's spectacle, where you could give me an original sci-fi film, but if you give me as much spectacle as Interstellar and Independence Day did, because those were both original films, original sci-fi films, I would go see it, and I did. I went and saw those films in the theater because that's what it takes to get me to spend $40 to go for 2 hours of entertainment is this big spectacle. But the thing is that I know we keep going back to Ex Machina, but for me, even if I knew that I was going to enjoy it as much as I did, I still wouldn't go see it in the theater, because that's not a movie that you absolutely need to see in the theater.
Right, exactly. There's something to be said about that. Or there's something to be said, like I keep coming back to. People like to say that the age of the quote-unquote movie star is dead, and maybe that's true when it comes to the hard numbers. But casts will get me into original films. They just will. I mean, one of my favorite films from the last few years, I know a lot of people don't like it, but I still love it to this day, is American Hustle. And the reason I went to go see American Hustle is because of its cast. I love every single person in that cast. And so that was the big drawing factor for me.
I love American Hustle.
And I mentioned this on the show on a filibuster a couple weeks ago. But one of my more interesting original films that's coming out later this year is Passengers.
Yes.
And not only is it because it's a sci-fi film, but what's drawing me in? Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence.
I can't even imagine what kind of hijinks are going to ensue with those two at the helm.
I don't think it's going to be a funny film. I hear it's more of a drama, but what I'm saying is there's something to be said for star power with original films. Because yes. I love those two actors so much, I will go see it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, absolutely. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because we should mention, here's a few films that are coming up that are sci-fi and original. And there's some of these sound a whole lot better than others. One is called Geostorm, with Gerard Butler, Ed Harris, and Jim Sturgis, and Catherine Winnick. And I think there's a worldwide geostorm, whatever that is, and they have to save the planet. Then you have a movie called Spectral, which sounds pretty interesting, that has Emily Mortimer and Max Martini. So not a lot of star power, but it's a sci-fi action movie where a special ops team is dispatched to fight supernatural beings that have taken over New York City. So think of it like if the Ghostbusters were Marines. That's kind of what it sounds like. Then you have a Keanu Reeves movie that's coming out that I'm pretty excited about, because I don't care what anybody says. I friggin' love Keanu Reeves. He's a scientist who's obsessed with bringing back his dead family members following a tragic traffic accident.
Keanu Reeves is a scientist.
I know. It's so cool.
That's one way to describe it.
And then you have Assassin's Creed, which that's not an original story because it's based off a video game. Now, normally, like, sometimes you could say, oh, it's based off a video game, but nobody's ever heard of it. Everyone's heard of Assassin's Creed. So
yeah,
that doesn't really count. Then you have the Passengers that you mentioned. And then you have something that is, I think, in development. It's called The Circle. Listen to this. It's got Emma Watson, Tom Hanks, Karen Gillan, John Boyega. And it revolves around a woman who lands a job at a powerful tech company called The Circle. And it links users' personal email, social media, banking, and purchasing with their universal operating system. And so it takes place in the future, but, you know, it feels like it's going to be one of those Gattaca things where it's like the not too distant future, you know?
Right.
Story of Your Life, again, star power, Amy Adams, Jeremy Renner, Forest Whitaker. And this one is, this one I'm actually really excited about because this one makes me think of Darmok, where an expert linguist who is recruited by the military, she's recruited to determine whether or not aliens come in peace after alien crafts, they land around the world. I think that is a great idea. And there's tons more originals coming out this year and next year. So maybe this could, like, there's like 20 more that I'm not mentioning. Maybe this could be, a resurgence.
It could be a resurgence, and so, you know, some of the quote-unquote original films that I'm looking forward to this year are adaptations, but even that, I still give the benefit of the doubt to. Like, one of my most anticipated of the year is this Girl on the Train movie, and that's because I like the look of the trailer, but mostly because of the star power again. I love Emily Blunt, and I love, especially from last year, Rebecca Ferguson coming out of Rogue Nation is in that one.
I read that book, and I think I'm the only person on Earth. Well, let me rephrase that. The girl and I are the only people on Earth who did not like that book. So we're hoping that the movie's better.
That means I'm going to love it.
Yeah, probably, because you don't like good things. Oh, owned.
And you'll only like bad things.
Well, there you go. That's the piece that we can make with this trope, is that you only like bad things, and I don't like good things. There we go.
And yet somehow we can meet in the middle sometimes with something like Gone Girl.
There you go.
Which was quote-unquote original, but still an adaptation.
Still an adaptation, that's the thing. Is that, like, yeah, it's hard because I don't think that's a distinction that we need to get into right now. But when I was doing research for this, it kind of made me wonder, you know, like, okay, so Ready Player One, you know, that's it's a movie based off of an original story. But because it's an adaptation, is that an original story? I think the line is yes, because not everybody in the world has
read
Ready Player One. But if you're looking at, like, Harry Potter, yeah, everybody's read Harry Potter. And so, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Do you agree with that?
There are certain books that reach the lexicon before it becomes a movie. Harry Potter was one of them. Hunger Games was definitely another, because I heard of those books way before the movies come out.
Right.
I hadn't even read them, but I heard about them. But something like Gone Girl or something like Girl on the Train, those are niche books that have gained enough of an audience where they want to make it into a movie. But somehow they feel more original. I don't know why. But
that's the thing. I think it's something that can't really be defined. I think it's one of those gray areas where you could go either way, depending on how the culture reacts to this original content, the source material.
So I don't know where you want to go from here, but as far as my thoughts on this overall discussion that we've been having is, I champion original ideas. I hope that they succeed. I hope that they still continue to be made. But I have a strong opinion against people who keep saying, oh, Hollywood is running out of ideas.
Yeah,
because that's an easy line to throw out just because you don't like some of the movies that are coming out this year, and you're not even willing to give them a chance. I think that's a very, very close-minded, judgmental attitude, and I would say Hollywood's not running out of ideas. They're just being careful with which ones they choose to fund, and understanding that the movie business is still a business. I understand that mentality. I understand that franchises will make them money. And what's more, I want franchises to continue because I'm a fan of franchises. I get, there's something to be said for getting invested in characters and wanting to see them continue and wanting to see where they end up. So I don't think that you can get mad that Hollywood is franchise oriented, because you're just, to do so, you're just trying to stop the tide. Basically, it is what it is. Enjoy the original films that have come out. Hopefully that they please you in a way that not only makes you happy, but will make money. At the end of the day, franchise is a franchise. And so I've made my peace with it.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. And I think also if people who constantly complain about the things that you just mentioned about, you know, like Hollywood running out of ideas and everything like that, if that was really the case, and we all stopped watching these bad franchise films, then Hollywood would do something different. Hollywood would fund more original activity, more original movies, because we vote with our wallet, we vote with our pocketbook. If all of us in mass rejected franchise films and then went towards this original content, then you would see that more and more. We are the reason why Hollywood is treating us this way.
And yet I feel like even with that statement, I don't feel like we deserve a finger wagging because we choose to fund franchises. I think that...
Yeah, no, not at all. That's not what I'm saying.
Oh, I know that's not what you were saying. I just wanted to say that that's an important distinction. People will say that and say, oh, look at what you're doing. Look at what makes money and look at what you're spending your money on. I don't know why you're scolding people for that, because like I said, if you're gonna, people have favorites, they have fandoms, they want to spend their money on certain things. They don't deserve to be scolded for that just because the studios are giving them what they think they want.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, before we tie up and before we give final thoughts, I think there is something really cool that I need to talk to you about and talk to the listeners about, because we have some really exciting news for the Nerd Party Network. We have a new partnership with lootcrate.com. Now, what's lootcrate.com, you might ask? You've probably heard of it. If you are an online geek, and if you're listening to this podcast, you most likely are an online geek. You have heard of Loot Crate. It is a really, really cool system where it's a subscription service where they send you a box every month.
A crate of loot, as it were?
A crate of loot. And in this crate of loot, this crate of holding, it has a theme every single month, and you get to find out what that theme is by going to their website. And it contains 68 items of like licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, Pop Funkos, T-shirts, you know, like, and it's all geek related. It's all really cool nerd stuff. And they listen to our podcast. They love our stuff. And they said, hey, let's get together. And so we said yes, they said yes. And so because you are a Nerd Party listener, you get a special discount. All you have to do is go to www.lootcrate.com/nerdparty and then enter the code nerdparty, and you'll get money off of a subscription. And so just by listening to us, you will save some money by going with this Loot Crate monthly subscription. And it's really cool because it's month to month. You don't have to like sign up for a year or anything like that. And you have until the 19th of every month to subscribe to get the box that has that specific theme that you might want. And then it's yours to keep and you can cancel anytime. Lootcrate.com/nerdparty. Again, that's lootcrate.com/nerdparty. And then enter in the code nerdparty. You'll save some money and you'll help out the show.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Exciting stuff.
Good stuff. Exciting stuff. So remember that. Save it. Link it. Okay. Final thoughts. Franchise versus original. I think we can live in a world where we love both.
I will vote with my wallet for those original ideas. At the same time, though, I refuse to let myself feel like some sort of movie criminal for voting with my wallet to the franchises that I enjoy.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm going to spend, you know, $10 later today on X-Men, and I'm happily doing it because it's a franchise that I like. And so I get to vote with my wallet for that franchise to continue.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. And just remember to download, subscribe, and give us a rating. And if you give us a 5-star rating, we'll mention you on the show. And please check out our other shows. We talked about them earlier in the show. But just as a recap, we have this show. We have the spinoff show, Filibuster. We got Nerd Nuptial, which is looking at geek life through a married lens, and Aggressive Negotiations as the Star Wars podcast.
I'm waiting for Lee now to substitute on Nerd Nuptial, because that should be interesting.
I heard him mention that. And if whenever he wants to spoon, he has my number. So thank you guys so much for listening.
And you can find us individually on Twitter if you want. I'm at mhanson0207.
I'm at the Insane Robin.
Thank you so much for joining us for our discussion on original ideas versus franchises. And until next time, Tristan and I will see you at the movies.
Talk nerdy to me.
Welcome to Nerd Pod.
Everyone has a story to tell. Take Sarah. She can see all the films she wants, whenever she wants, at Cineworld. From X-Men Apocalypse to Alice Through the Looking Glass. She gets 10% off all her cinema snacks. Tasty nachos, chilled soft drinks, you name it. Plus 25% off at some of her favorite restaurants, like Chiquito. That's Sarah's unlimited story. Start yours today when you join Cineworld Unlimited from just $16.90 a month. Love cinema? Join the club. Sign up today at your local Cineworld or visit cineworld.com.